I was about to say good morning. It's morning somewhere in the world, isn't it? Welcome, everybody. My name is Matthew Taylor. I'm the minister at Devonport Anglican Church. And our local Devonport churches have come together, as we do quite often, to organise this candidates forum on behalf of all the churches in the Braddon electorate. Not just for us. So we're going to be recording an audio of tonight. Just be aware of any heckling. Make sure it's nice and clear so we can get it right. Just so we can share with anyone that's not able to be here from across the electorate, those who are interested in being informed about how they want to vote in our next state election. Can I begin by just saying thank you to all of our candidates that have dropped in for tonight? My thinking was we might get you to come up and sit here. We might do that though as you welcome each other, as you have an introduction. So after your introduction, then you can just sit down here. That'll just make coming backwards and forwards from the microphone a little bit easier and less gaps for our recording, if that's okay. We really appreciate all of you coming and speaking with us tonight. I know there's been other forums as well, so you guys are probably well rehearsed. We tried to leave it late so you'd be practiced, you know, so you know what you're doing. But tonight we're hoping to address the issues that we as Christian voters across the electorate are particularly concerned about. Now, you know, our main concern as Christian voters is, of course, people. Yeah, you may have seen the latest Anglicare ad on TV at the moment, apart from the candidates, they're too busy to watch telly. In the ad, they say they want to help every Tasmanian have a safe place to live, help them afford the everyday essentials, and have access to improved systems and services. And the reason they want all this, as they say in the ad, is because every Tasmanian matters. The recent NABA, NAYBA, impact audit confirms this for us through the actions that the churches do in the electorate, that every Tasmanian matters. I don't know if anyone's seen the NABA audit report, but it reported that the work of Christian organisations across the northwest coast of Tasmania has an annual social impact of just over $13.5 million. And that includes 55,774 people who are being served every year in many different ways. Now, I'll have to check with Nick and the other ministers around here, but I'm pretty sure that we don't have 55,774 people in our churches across the Northwest each Sunday. But we serve them because every Tasmanian matters. And that's because Jesus taught us to love our neighbour. He taught us that greater love hath no person than to lay down their life for their friends. We're going to be celebrating that together in a couple of weeks, the Devonport churches together in a couple of weeks. And we know that Jesus literally did that. He laid down his life to save us. But for us, he wants us to live generous and sacrificial lives of service, putting other needs before our own. That's the reason why we've invited the candidates to come and speak to us tonight, because we believe that every Tasmanian matters. And we as the churches are serving alongside whichever government's going to get elected. And so we want to give the candidates the opportunity to share how that's going to work together. I'm not running as a candidate, you'll be pleased to hear. So I'm going to hand over to them all shortly, but just allow me to introduce who we've got with us here tonight, here in the room, but also for those who are listening over in the next couple of days. So in no particular order, we have Darren Briggs, Green candidate. Great to have you with us. Thank you. I hope the applause can be heard on the audio. We've got Patrick Fabian from the Liberals, so great to have you with us. Just in front of Patrick, we've got Felix Ellis from the Liberals. Thanks, mate. Miriam Beswick, Jackie Lambie Network candidate. So great to have you with us. And Dale Marshall up the back from Shooters, Fishers and Farmers. So great to have you with us as well. Now, before they all come up, just a few housekeeping things for tonight. For those here in the room not listening on the audio, the bathrooms are over to your right, behind that wall through the door there. If you're listening on the audio, well, that's up to you. The emergency evacuation meeting point is out the door in the car park, just in case these guys get really heated and, you know, something awesome happens tonight. And for the sake of the recording, what I'll ask each person to do as we get up to speak and answer each question, if you can just state your name and party before you speak, just so the people listening know who they're listening to. So what we're going to do is begin by inviting each candidate to share a 3-minute introduction. I will time that for you in no particular order of preference, and then we'll get into some questions as well. And we're going to start with 3 questions, which have been put together by some of the heads of churches across the state around the topics of housing and homelessness, employment and freedom to operate according to our mission, as well as gambling. They're the first 3 that we're going to look at. And I'll invite each candidate for all the questions just to keep their answers to a 2-minute response. I'll let you know when 2 minutes is up. And for the sake of fairness, when 2.5 minutes is up, we'll turn the volume off. Well, I'll let you know. But then after that, there's going to be an opportunity where you all have been writing your questions for tonight. Nick, I think, has been busy moderating them, so we'll get to them. If you haven't yet written a question and you'd like to ask one, Nick's got some more paper. Write your question there. Pass it to Nick. He's the pastor here at Lifeway Baptist. And he'll read out the questions as we go. All right. Well, you haven't come here to hear me tonight, so just before the candidates get up, let me pray as we begin. Our loving God, we thank you for this opportunity tonight, for open and respectful communication. Lord, help us all to wrestle well with the issues in our state. Knowing we can't fix all the problems at the same time, we ask that you'll give us wisdom to know how best to tackle them with the resources that are available to us. Help us to all work together for the sake of all people, because we know that all Tasmanians matter. May your will be done here on earth as it is in heaven. And we ask this in the name of Jesus, our Lord and Saviour. Amen. Well, I might ask Darren if he'd like to come and give us his first introduction, only because he responded so quickly on the email. So I'll hand over to Darren. Thanks, mate.
Hey, guys. Darren Briggs is my name from the Greens. I guess, firstly, I'll be open and honest to you. This is a very familiar setting for me for most of my life, probably up to about 12 years ago. When I would say I was a practicing Christian, Churches of Christ Baptist Church. That's not the case now. I wasn't able to find a connection with Jesus and the teaching of the Bible. And I felt, for me personally, it wasn't where I was heading. Where I do know I'm heading is in the principles of Christianity, of love and fairness and openness and honesty. And I guess I'm passionately can talk about these issues tonight that I'm about to talk to you about. So I arrived here in 2011, absolutely drawn by the beauty and the mild climate. I was a previous dairy vet and had a taste of that in the northeast back in the late 90s, but came to further my career in medicine, in general practice and in emergency medicine in 2011. And I've worked mainly in emergency medicine up to 2 years ago and now in general practice in Ulverston. I describe myself as an unintentional political candidate. I'm here for my kids' future. So here we are at yet again another snap election. I grabbed the signs out from 2021 when I first started this little campaigning, And on the signs, I'd graffitied health, housing, integrity and environment. Sadly, we seem to be on the same issues today. I think from healthcare, from my professional point of view, we're not only treading water, we've gone backwards. We've got ongoing workforce shortages, increasingly unhealthy population of all ages, and we've got more demand on our system. We need to fund, recruit, entice and encourage and inspire staff to work and stay in Tasmania. But healthcare needs a reset. Prevention is key. Apple a day keeps the doctor away is critical, and it's been underinvested and underfunded for many years. Priorities, however, also need to extend to housing, because if you don't have a roof over your head, you can't prosper, you don't stay well, it's hard to get a job. Cost of living, we'll be more into that as well, is absolutely biting hard for people at the moment. No AFL stadium in Hobart, absolutely a team, but in Launceston at York Park, with no additional public money going to a corporate entity. And yes, climate and environment, but there's so much more to the Greens than just climate and environment, but we are absolutely focused on that. Look, I'm not a rock star political candidate, but I'm rock solid when it comes to commitment and energy to represent the Northwest, and especially our and my kids' future. I'm rock solid in consistency, transparency and honesty. Greens have proven to be persistent despite the odds and fearless despite public perception. And that's how we, and I say we because this is not just me, will represent you in the Northwest. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Darren. He saw my signal. Well done. great work. Miriam, would you like to come up and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself? Thank you.
Good evening, all. This is my very first speech in this arena, so please be kind. I grew up in churches. I am a very strong Christian. I'm 10C3 Devonport. I have come into this arena because I really feel that we need to be a little bit more spread in terms of how we represent our community. So at the moment, we have all been socialised in terms of we must have two parties and we don't have a lot of debate necessarily, and I think that there's an opportunity here for more independence and more freer thinking. So that's why I'm running with Jackie. I really like the values of her party, and I didn't want to be a full independent because that is terrifying. but yeah, as a Christian, as a small business owner, we had the business at the big house, and we supported the C3 church for many years in sharing that space, and it was really, really exciting and really huge opportunity to show our faith to the community. So, you know, as a Jackie Lambie Network party member, we've been out in the streets, we've been talking to a lot of people, we've been finding out what is concerning about Tasmania at the moment, what are people worried about, and I think Darren has, you know, really well represented that as to what we are hearing out and about in the community and what people are concerned about. So, you know, we're very much supportive in very much the same ways, and we'll talk a little bit about that later because I'm not a big long figure. So, thank you.
Phyllis, did you and Patrick want to come up together, or how did you want to work that? Yep, okay. Yep, easy. I'll let him introduce himself. Thanks, mate.
Good Well, good evening, everyone. My name's Patrick Fabian. It's wonderful to be here, and it's wonderful to see lots of familiar faces around the room tonight, either from different churches that I've had to do with, or from work, or just in the community. So it's really lovely to be here tonight. So I can just say thank you for all coming. And it's wonderful to have so many people of faith who have gathered, who are caring about the future of their state, who are caring about what is happening in this election. So thank you very much for coming in and being concerned about your community. I am as well. So I'm a Christian, so church has been a part of my life since I was born. So my parents took us to church as kids with my brother and sister, and then when I left to go down to Hobart, met my wife at church and got involved in there, did a little bit of preaching and some theological study on the side as part of that before I saw the light and moved back up to the northwest coast and brought my family with me. So I'm a teacher at the Christian school in Ulverston. I've got some people who I think attended or have connections to the school there, and I attend church in Ulverston. I'm an elder at our church there, and obviously faith is something that is really important to me, as it is important to you. It's something that really is at the core of what I'm about, what drives my values, what drives the way I interact with people and my cares for the future. And so there's some of the things that I'll be bringing to the team. The reason I've wanted to stand as a member of the Liberal Party for here in Braddon is because I really do have a sense of servant-hearted leadership and the way that Christ taught us to live, to be able to reach out to those in the community to make our place a better space to be. But also to be standing up for what it is that we believe in, to be actively saying, you know, this is who I am, this is what I believe, lots of people believe this too, so to be a bit of an advocate for those values as well. So that's just a bit about me. Some of the things that we'll be talking about, I'd love to be able to answer some questions. We've got Felix who's here to be able to, we'll buddy up to answer some of those questions as well, but really care about justice in our community. So some of the things that I did at a previous school was actually around ministry and service, actually teaching kids to be able to find ways to give back to their community, to be able to find ways to be able to reach out to those who are in need, to be able to reach out to those and even small acts of kindness to be able to do things for them. So that's just a bit about me. I'm not sure exactly where my timing got up to, sorry.
Got 15 seconds.
So just once again, lovely to be here tonight, and I look forward to talking to some not so familiar faces later on. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Fabian. Phyllis, would you like to come and say a few words? Thank you.
I might just grab that if that's okay. And look, thanks, Matt. Thank you all for gathering here tonight. It's wonderful to see you all. My name's Felix Ellis. I'm a plumber by trade, local Liberal Member of Parliament. I'm a Christian, sometimes not a particularly good one, but my wife is a saint, so if that counts for anything. And we have two beautiful boys, and we're really enjoying and embracing the challenge of raising them in a Christian home in a time where that's not a given. That's a choice that people make, and really loving that opportunity. We go to church here in Devonport, and I wanted to just say thank you tonight for two things. Thank you firstly for your prayers. The Bible teaches us to pray for our leaders, and I know so many people in here that I know personally pray for us in the work that we do, and pray even for our political opponents. And that's a discipline that I try and practice myself as well, even and especially the more we disagree, because that encouragement is just so vital at a time where there are a lot of slings and arrows, and the public leadership is becoming more and more challenging as our society becomes more and more diverse and potentially more and more opinionated as well. And the second thing I wanted to say thank you for is all the tangible work that you do in our community, in big ways and small, serving in the way that the Bible teaches us, that servant leadership. It's an incredible gift that you give to people, because when people of faith give to their local community and support the ones that they love and their neighbours, they do so not just giving of their resources, of money or food, and I acknowledge people in this room who do that and have chosen that life of service. But when you do it with faith and you do it with love, you're giving as well of your time, of your heart, of yourself. And that is the true gift that we give to people when we're helping them in their time of need, and potentially that stewardship as well. That's an incredible thing that churches, faith communities, and people right across our beautiful region do each and every day. It's often unseen, it's often unheralded, but it is absolutely critical in everything that you do. Thank you to the people that also lead a life of service that is much more, mainstream. People that are just going about working and raising families in this beautiful part of the world. We're so grateful for the contribution that you make to the next generation because they are our future, and it's absolutely a phenomenal way that you give back each and every day. So again, I just want to say thank you all for the work that you do. I'm really looking forward to maybe sharing a little bit about our thoughts with you here tonight. And it's wonderful to see the Christian and faith communities gathering in this way in the Northwest Coast, getting engaged and being active, because there is so much in this world that's really important that we are engaging people in the debates, in the big challenges, and in the big opportunities that are coming in this time. So thank you.
Well timed. Thanks, Felix. Dale, would you like to come and say a few words for us? Thank you.
Good evening, everybody, and thank you, Matt, and all the churches along the coast for getting together, our church leaders from out the state, to put forward to us some very serious concerns we all have. And look, I was born and bred in Devonport, the Meerkroft home out there. That was the maternity hospital a long time ago. Right, so I played sport, basketball, football, all what young kids did. I used to sail. My father, Erwin Marshall, he drowned outside Alamatta while racing. I was racing that day in a little Manly, and it's probably, you know, as any young boy, I idolised my father. We did everything together. But regardless of that, there was no community service as such, like money or anything like that. My mother had four boys and a girl. I was the youngest boy, so I was 10 years old when Dad passed. But the thing that changed my life in a lot of ways, we were a very Christian family. I still remember it. I've got a photo at home of the four boys. All got the same jumper on, the V-jack jumper, the shorts, the black shoes, the little grey socks. I still remember it as clear as. Every Sunday we had to walk up to Church of England from down in Ashburner Street. Regardless, rain, hail, we didn't have a car. So had to go. I was at Devonport Primary School. When my father died, I went to Reese High School. But family and friends is what kept our family together, and most importantly, like I said, our church was our rock. They kept us alive, they kept food on our tables, clothes, and my mother was a very proud person. She was a Lynn from Sprayton, and a lot of you may know the Lynns from Sprayton, apple growers and all that, and most of those were brothers. But later on, when I went to Reese High for 2 years, went to Latrobe High for 2 years, went into the Merchant Navy as a cadet engineer, and that's where I was for about 13 years. Then out, and I've been in business for probably the last 35, 40 years. In Devonport, I've got three businesses, I employ people. I know what it's like to have nothing, right? I know what it's like to be homeless, because I know, you know, life's not always good at home with four boys and a girl. All right, so my aunties and uncles look after me. Right, I've learnt the values of the church and the people in it. We may have all different views. Like this shirt says, shooters and fishers. You may hate shooting, you may hate fishing, but it's my choice to do those things. It's your choice, and I've said since the first thing that I posted, stay out of my private life. So I think for all of us, too many people put their finger into things that shouldn't be there. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate the frankness and openness, honesty from each of you. But now the hard work starts. So we've got the three categories of questions that have been formed by the heads of churches are going to lead us off with these questions. So what we'll do is we'll give each candidate 2 minutes to do that. I'll give you a signal when it's two. If it goes too long, I'll let you know. But our first topic is housing and homelessness. Now, let me just give you a little bit of a spiel why this question is included here. And we've sort of broken it up as well into homelessness and rental housing, the two categories, subcategories of that. But let me just read a little bit for us. Affordable housing and homelessness are two significant challenges facing the nation, particularly Tasmania. Last year, Anglicare's 2003 rent affordability snapshot affirmed Tasmania as the least affordable rental market in the country. For example, renting in Hobart has increased 60% since 2016, and rents across Tasmania have risen 10 times faster than income support payments. Not surprisingly, homelessness in Tasmania continues to increase. On census night 2022, 2,350 Tasmanians said they were experiencing homelessness. That's a staggering 45% increase than on census night 6 years earlier. Now, there's two issues there. The first one to do with homelessness. Let me just read a little bit more there. So we seek detailed information regarding your planned policies or initiatives to combat homelessness in Tasmania. Notably, peak organisations like Shelter Tas, TasCos and other stakeholders are urging for the establishment of specific targets to reduce homelessness. One suggested target is a 50% reduction within 5 years and a complete eradication within 10 years in Tasmania. And here's our question. How do you or your party intend to tackle the homelessness issue in Tasmania, specifically aiming to achieve a 50% reduction within 5 years and complete elimination within 10 years? We'll start with that first question. And why don't we just go across this way this time and we'll mix it up for each question, if that's okay. So I'll ask if we could just again repeat your name and party, that'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, Miriam Beswick, Jackie Lammy Network. Jackie and Tammy have worked really hard on homelessness and housing initiatives in the Senate. They have gotten Tasmania significant discounts on debt and improvements like income to build homes and things most recently. What we haven't been able to see is how that has been spent and how that is going to be spent within Tasmania. So what we are looking for is an opportunity to keep, to have people in the space to put that pressure on and keep that happening. Homelessness and Shelter Tas has been a huge part of Jackie's life. Jackie's really huge in that, and I think all of the team are well behind her in that. So we live in the little space of being in between. We're not government, we're not trying to create something from nothing. We don't have information in terms of books and information at the moment, but what we will be doing is holding them accountable, holding things into place to make sure that these things are not left and that we do keep that pressure on to make sure that we know where money is spent and how it is being spent and the most efficient way possible and not being delayed. Keep it short time frames because we do need to get there and these things need to happen.
Homelessness. Firsthand, I see it basically every day. One of my buildings down near the bridge, the big green building, kids are there very regularly, from a 10-year-old upwards. You know, it's pretty scary stuff. And the biggest problem, I think, with a lot of homelessness is drugs, alcohol, whether it's the youth or whether it's the parents. You know, like I'm on call 7 days a week, 24 hours a day with our business. So I'm out and about. I do around 60 to 70,000 kilometres a year. I see kids, Lily Cove's Beach, coming out of the tea trees. And you think, what's he doing? But what it is, you know, the home life mustn't be great. So to me, where are we going to put these kids to make them feel safe? You know, like I've put kids in a back shed at my workshop, gave them a swag to sleep with. The next day you go down and see how they're going. They're gone. Swag's gone. I really don't know the answer because I don't really think there is one. But I think households, kids wandering the streets at 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night at a very young age, what are their parents doing? I think the church is a wonderful organisation where people can get help, can get education around this sort of stuff. But look, I don't know if there's anybody here that's got the answer. I'm willing to take it on board and fight it till the end. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. And look, this is absolutely a critical question. I was out door knocking in East Devonport today, and housing and cost of living is key issues for people in that community, as they are for communities across the northwest. So there are a range of different challenges within it. So firstly, housing. We need to build more homes, and we need to encourage more people to become homeowners as well. We have a plan to abolish stamp duty for first home buyers. That's going to be important for people coming into owning their own home, which is ultimately a wonderful goal for our community, but also supporting people who are not at that point in the journey. Through our new Homes Tasmania body, our plan is to build 10,000 new social and affordable homes by 2032, because ultimately, to drive down the cost of rent and to make more homes available, we need to build more homes. And 2,000 of those will be for social homes, specifically by 2027. That's an important investment. But then if we look further, people in crisis situations, providing crisis accommodation is absolutely critical. In the last few months, we've completed building of a men's shelter here in Devonport, a place that blokes can go and find that safe housing, because we know that that's critical, particularly in a moment of need, and providing better support for women and children potentially fleeing family violence through our ARCH centres, which we're building here on the northwest coast, and we've built in the north and the south as well. But even more broadly than that, homelessness in particular is not just a challenge of a roof over the head. It's also a challenge of what we do in the space of drug and alcohol, how we can better support people in that difficult journey, how we can better support people in terms of building strong families, safe families, a place where young children are protected and women are respected in particular. Those are really key parts of the work that we do in the policing space and also the community counselling space that we do as well. It's a deeply, deeply complex problem, but it's one in which we're absolutely committed to addressing because it's so important for everyone in our community.
Very good. Just to add a bit to what the Minister said, so I myself have never experienced homelessness, but I've met many people who have, sadly. And I've done that through with work, with talking with different students and what's going on in their home lives. I volunteer down at Cup of Kindness in Ulverston, which is working with and providing meals for people who are struggling at the moment. And also with some of the community service we did through a school is that we were going down and serving meals to those people who are in need. So there's lots of aspects to helping people who are homeless. It's not just about getting a roof over the head, which is really important, but the things that you do first to be able to make sure that people don't get to that situation, that you're helping people, you're helping families, you're helping them with the services that they need so that they don't get into that situation. When they do, they were finding ways to be able to support them to be able to get back onto their feet. So they're the things that I think we really need to do, and we really need to have tangible ways that we can do that, both small and big ways that government's able to step in to help people, but also being able to support the many, many charities which are out there, some of which I've been involved in, many of which I know that you probably have been involved in too, to be able to support them to do a good job to be able to help our community. Thank you.
Darren Briggs from the Greens. I just want to preface all my questions. All our policy is online and you can get it from a QR code there. I will not be able to mention everything, obviously, and I want you to check it out and make sure that what I'm saying is correct. It's pretty sad that, you know, Bob Hawke's pledge that nobody would live in without a home back in the 80s has not been attained in a rich country like ours. We've had successive governments not invest in homelessness. We are absolutely committed to invest in homelessness. I see it day to day in my role as a GP and in emergency where people are without their home and it affects all aspects of their life. I've worked with like TASCOS, Anglicare, Salvos, which are doing a great job, but there is so little housing and accommodation that's long term that needs to be changed. So we've got a policy of a wraparound supports as a housing first approach for homelessness, and absolutely doing all the other acute things like increasing emergency food relief and things, but we need to get people into homes. We suggest we need to increase funding for new homes by about four times what's currently been spent to make it a far more realistic approach to getting a number of houses. We have multiple times tried to put stop unreasonable rent increases and no cause evictions. For example, in 21 and 23, that was put up to in the last parliament and was voted down by both major parties. Back in the COVID pandemic, we managed to put a freeze, as in we, the Southern Greens MPs in the state parliament, managed to arrange a freeze on rent increases and to stop people being evicted during that emergency period. And back in the last Greens Labor Alliance, there was a Greens housing minister which saw public housing lists go down to the lowest level in a decade. Then investment is key. We have to invest in people. As you say, you can check out online or other policies on housing and cost of living. Thanks.
Matt from the Anglican Church back again, just for the benefit of our audio. There's a second part to this question to do with rentals. Now, let me just read a little bit and ask another question, and I'll invite, you know, anyone that would like to answer this. Some have touched on it already, so you're welcome to answer this or to leave it. But the statement is this. So Tasmania has experienced a rise in rental prices and a scarcity of affordable housing, resulting in difficulties for renters. And the question is this. How do you plan to enhance protections for renters in Tasmania, such as limiting rent increases, curbing short-stay accommodations in regions with low rental vacancy rates, and abolishing no-grounds evictions? Furthermore, what are your intentions regarding the review and potential reform of the Residential Tenancy Act to better cater for the needs of renters? If anyone would like to have a look at that, you're welcome to do so. Darren?
Yeah, add a little bit. Darren Briggs from the Greens. I can't give you specifics about the Rental Act you're talking about. Our policies are definitely for stopping the unacceptably high increase rates of rental increase, no cause evictions. Short stay policy is for no new short stay, like MB type accommodation in residential areas, and to phase those out in areas, as you say, that are a problem. We also want to strengthen the rights for like tenants who have pets, for people that struggle to get in housing for lots of other reasons, and there's more. I'll leave it at that. Thanks, guys.
I'm a bit of an economics person, being in business. For most of you people here are younger than me. Back in the 80s, housing department, we were building 50, 80 houses a month everywhere, all over the place. Housing was an issue. Right, when we got to the 90s, our government at the time decided they'll offer all the tenants of those houses to buy them. So they were buying them for $50,000, $60,000. So all of a sudden our community housing was going. It was going down the gurgler. We've never caught up. Right, now, due to COVID, 20-square house along the coast here was probably worth $350,000, $400,000. Now they're worth $900,000. As an investor, they want 10% return. That's why the rent's so high.
So, look, the critical thing in terms of making sure that we're driving down rents in Tasmania and putting downward pressure on them is building more homes and encouraging more people to take that leap of faith. Potentially, that's the first investment property that someone's ever purchased, and that's a major investment for any family. So as part of our policy, we're going to be incentivising people to do build to rent. So instead of building to then move into the home, they'll build it and make it available in the rental market. We'll do that by reducing the land tax that people pay, and which we think will incentivise people to take that plunge. We've also got a policy in terms of putting a 5% fee on short stay accommodation like Airbnb, and importantly, using that money to get rid of stamp duty for first home buyers, which is also a critical part of the equation, because ultimately we want to be encouraging renters to take that big plunge and get a slice of the Tasmanian dream as well with buying their own home. That's going to be a massive opportunity, particularly for our young people who often find that stamp duty a big barrier to taking that next step. We also, in this state, can I say, need to be building more homes because we have more people that want to come here. We have a strong and growing economy, and there's major opportunities for people to move to Tasmania. So we've seen one of the fastest rates of growth anywhere in the country. But that means that we also need local councils keeping up. And if you look at councils like the City of Hobart, they spend more time knocking homes back than they do approving them. We need to change that mentality in parts of our state because ultimately we need to drive the state forward. And I was in Bridgewater not long ago with an amazing charity called St Joseph's Affordable Homes. And one of their missions is actually building more social and affordable homes for people on low incomes. And one of the incredible opportunities that they are really demonstrating is not just building homes for communities, but it's actually training up young people in those communities to get the skills and qualifications they need as apprentices building those homes for people in their communities. That is an amazing organisation, delivering good, not just when they build the homes for people to move into, not just when the people are moving into the homes, but right through the process, providing young people opportunities so that they can then go on to afford and buy their first home as well.
Sorry, this thing is just, for those online, I just have to move the microphone down because I keep having to look through it because I'm about a foot shorter than everybody else up here, which is making me very uncomfortable. I totally agree. There is so many great ideas here about how we can support housing better. One thing I've really noticed in some of these ideas is that they focus on one little thing, and they just sort of put this blanket idea across everyone. So we're going saying, oh, we'll either stop Airbnbs being a thing or we'll charge them all 5%. That's great. That's a really good start. But for some people, it's not a suitable house for it to not be an Airbnb. They're not necessarily a property that wants to be on the market for a long-term rental. And so we need to make sure that some of these outside of the main are looked after, that when we put these things in place, that we think about some of the less obvious, the less obvious people and the situations whereby we can make sure it doesn't. It's not one size fits all. We've really got to think about who are we affecting that we didn't mean to affect when we created this policy. We've all been in situations where a government's come along and said, "Oh, we're just going to do this. We put all our eggs in one basket," and then we turn around and go, "Oh, we didn't realise that was going to be the fallout. That those people over there, their businesses went bust, or those people over there had." you know, they couldn't keep up with the demand because we suddenly decided everything was going to work just by one way. So we really just need to make sure that we stretch our policies and make sure that they're not just one size fits all, and that we can actually meet the needs of many of the people in our community.
Matt Back from the Anglican Church. Thank you, everyone, for your feedback. That's to do with the topic of housing and homelessness. So I'm sure there's lots more to be said, but we've got lots of other questions to get through as well. So why don't we move on to our second topic, which is employment and the freedom to operate according to mission. Let me read the statement before asking the question. So faith-based agencies and organisations in Tasmania contribute significantly to the care and well-being of the community in the form of social welfare agencies, schools, hospitals and aged care facilities, among others. Increasingly, both in Australia and around the world, we are seeing governments introduce legislation that would prevent such organisations from having the freedom to hire employees on the basis of alignment to the religious mission of the organisation, and the threat of government funding being removed if such organisations do not offer services or meet conditions which are incompatible with their religious mission and identity. So the question on this topic is this: will you, your party, commit to protect the freedom of faith-based organisations to operate according to their mission and identity with regard to their hiring and employment policies, and ensure that government funding will not be made conditional on the basis of meeting certain conditions that are incompatible with the religious beliefs of the organisation? And if we can just say our name and party as we begin. Thank you.
So you know, Dale Marshall from the Shooters and Fishers Party. Okay, our policy on what we're talking about in this particular question. Faith-based organisations play a vital role now in providing essential services and support to communities across Tasmania. We firmly believe in protecting the freedom of these organisations to operate according to their mission and values. Including in matters of employment, our party will advocate for legislation that safeguards the autonomy of faith-based organisations in hiring practices and ensures that government funding is not contingent upon compromising their religious beliefs or identity. We recognise the values and the valuable contribution of these organisations will hold to uphold their rights and freedoms. Shooters and Fishers policy. Thank you.
Darren Briggs, the Greens. Look, our primary concern is the best interests of the child. We, you know, adhere to like the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, and want to assure that any child who's capable of forming his or her own views and are able to express those freely. As I said to you earlier, like I don't any longer have a Christian belief or faith. However, I fully support my youngest kid who absolutely has a Christian faith and belief, and I support him in progressing and chasing after that as much as I do. I support him, you know, emotionally. I take him to things. I want him to make a choice which best suits him. What we do not and will not do is support any educational institution discriminating against any person, adult or child, and be that their colour, race, sexual orientation or beliefs. We agree in principle that religious schools should be able to teach, employ staff and operate in accordance with their values and beliefs, but it is underpinned by we cannot discriminate. And I'd also say that I think, you know, with, you know, for example, with the recent commission inquiry into abuse against children. The more diversity we have in our organisations, the more oversight, the safer our kids are. And as I say, we're going to totally look out for the child and what's in their best interests. Thanks.
Well, look, it's absolutely critical that people are able to raise their children according to their own lights, as well as live their own life according to their own lights. And we know that faith is such an animating heart when it comes to healthcare institutions, education. I know our little boys go to a Christian daycare, and there are just amazing people in those settings. So we're absolutely committed to the protections that are afforded under the Anti-Discrimination Act here in Tasmania for people to operate religious institutions and hire people based on that mission, and we've got no intention of changing those rules. I was in Parliament when the Leader of the Greens at the time described evangelical Christianity as a death cult. And I was very proud to stand up against that kind of disgraceful characterisation of people of faith in our community doing wonderful things and living according to their own lights. And I wouldn't expect that a Christian institution would be compelled to hire that person, because ultimately, if you have a mission to undertake, to raise Christian families, to care for people in a way that is meaningful according to that faith, then those institutions need to be able to make those kind of discerning judgments about the people that they employ. I reject the characterisation, Darren, I'm sorry, around the Commission of Inquiry and bringing that into a discussion around faith and faith-based institutions, particularly educational ones. It's a society-wide problem. But ultimately, we need to be ensuring that the institutions that do so much good in this country, you know, religious schools educate nearly 50% of all children in Australia, that those institutions are encouraged, that they are fostered, and that they are able to produce even more human flourishing based on the teachings that have enabled so much good in our society that is built on a Judeo-Christian foundation. So absolutely, we're keen to protect faith-based institutions and their right to hire people that also have similar viewpoints.
So this is a space which is actually really important to me, because this is the space that I am in every day. So I work in Christian education, and of course we want our schools, and not just our schools, but all faith-based organisations, to be able to uphold the values which they stand for, the values which they say, this is who we are. When you come here, this is who you understand what we're about. Most schools and organisations are very welcoming of people. It's not a saying you cannot come here unless you are this. They're usually very welcoming of people, but they're always up front saying, but this is who we are about at the end of the day. If you're choosing to send your child here, this is what we are about. If you're choosing to be involved in this community, this is what we are about. I'm a leader in my school, I'm a leader in my church, and so I want to be able to see those organisations be able to stand up for what they believe in, to be able to continue with the values which they are founded in. And ultimately, I believe at the end of the day, in terms of when it comes to education, it's the parents' choice, not the government's, of what your child should believe and how they should behave. It's the parents' choice in what values and beliefs that they uphold. And it's not just schools, obviously, as well. It's not just schools which are faith-based organisations. Obviously, it's our churches, but it's all community groups, whether they are charities, whether they are hospitals, any services which they say, these are the values which we have, these are the values which we hold to, shape us, are important to us, and shape why we do what we are doing, why we are helping people. Is this what we are driven by? I believe that they should be able to hold those values, and that shouldn't change.
Miriam Beswick, Jackie Lamy Network. Guys are liberals. yes, totally agree. The answer basically is yes. This is not actually just about faith-based organisations. This is about all businesses and all organisations. Every business has a standard and an expectation of their culture. And if we can't hire based on what we expect our staff to you know, to promote, then, you know, we're going to have a little bit of chaos, particularly when we're trying to manage them and get them to actually behave in the way we need them to behave. So this is not just about our schools, and it's not just about our churches. This is just about all of our community.
Matt Back from the Anglican Church. Let's move on to our third topic, and thank you for all your honest answers on the last topic. And that topic is gambling, before we get to the additional questions that we're going to ask for tonight, time permitting, of course. And the gambling question states this. Let me read a statement first. Gambling is a significant problem throughout Australia, but also in Tasmania, with almost $400 million lost in 2020-2021 in this state alone. This equates to Tasmanian gamblers losing over $1 million every day, or on average, almost $1,700 per person annually. What more, Tasmanians from socioeconomically disadvantaged LGAs were 70% more likely to seek help for a gambling problem. In response, the Tasmanian Liquor and Gaming Commission recommended the implementation of a universal card system for poker machines, as recommended, which would have the following essential features. People need a card in order to gamble on any poker machine in Tasmania, binding pre-commitment and default loss limits, a single card is issued per person, and the system operates across all venues with poker machines. And the question is this. Do you support the full implementation of a universal card system for poker machines as recommended by the Tasmanian Liquor and Gaming Commission? If not, how will you or your party develop, promote and implement legislation in this area to protect individuals and their families from the devastating financial, social and psychological effects which gambling brings? Thank you.
Look, I might jump up and take this one because it's our policy. So, look, we're really proud of this policy and we're really looking forward to delivering it as soon as possible when Parliament returns, because ultimately we know the harm that gambling does in our community. I'm the Minister for Racing as well as a range of other hats and absolutely support people's right to gamble and wager and all those sort of things, but it needs to be responsible and there needs to be safeguards for people that have problems and need our support. So the mandatory pre-commitment policy that we've got for poker machines that the Tasmanian Liquor and Gaming Commissioner is helping us deliver is absolutely critical in that, because there are people in our community who just find it so difficult to stop. And I know how passionate Michael Ferguson is as our treasurer in terms of delivering that. He's got personal lived experience in this space. And I know his deep commitment to ensuring that we're protecting those people. As I say, we believe that people have a right to choose, but it's also important that we're protecting those people who are down on their luck or who have a problem and need our help. So that we're really looking to deliver that as part of the next Parliament. We want other parties to commit to it as well, because of course any change is difficult and there are people that would prefer that we didn't, but we absolutely believe that those little kids in that home where mum or dad might have a gambling problem, they absolutely deserve the protection of something like a mandatory pre-commitment card that ensures that that the money that should be spent on their food is spent on their food, rather than for mum and dad that can't afford it, putting it through pokies or other forms of gambling. Those kind of harm reduction protections are absolutely critical while we support, of course, free choice. And we're also investing about $100,000 into a new campaign for education of our community as well, because we want to ensure that we're not passing on harmful problem gambling behaviours to the next generation, and also that people know where to get help if and when they need it, because that's often one of the hardest things when you're looking when you have an addiction,
is to ask for help and to know where to ask for help as well. So it's our policy. We're really looking forward to delivering it, and I know how strongly it's supported in our broader community.
Darren Briggs, Tasman Greens. Absolutely support the pre-commitment policy. Gambling is a huge scourge on the community. Devonport was one of the biggest areas of spend on gambling. You might recall a number of election cycles ago, I believe Labor and the Greens were saying getting rid of pokies. Liberals managed to not allow that to happen, so we've still got pokies, we've still got people being harmed by this. We definitely support the pre-commitment card. We also support increasing taxes on casinos back to the 22 level because these industries need to pay their fair share. It certainly concerns me about the gambling involved with racing, involved with the AFL even, and thinking about the input that gambling has on the AFL and the push for the stadium. We will do everything we can to go back and reduce gambling harm to the community.
Dale Marshall, Shooters and Fishers. I think a lot of people in this room, regardless of faith or anything else, will know somebody that's lost their heart, life, lost their home, lost their family over gambling. I'm not a gambler. I just dislike smoking. It's just not there. All right, our policy. The issue of gambling addiction is a concern, particularly considering its impact on individuals and families. Like all addictions, harm minimisation programs are important. However, it is also important to respect the rights of individuals to decide how they spend their leisure time. They are adults after all. While we recognise the recommendations by the Tasmania Liquor and Gaming Commission, we believe in exploring comprehensive solutions that address the root cause of problem gambling. We are open to considering various measures, including implementation of a universal card system as part of a broader strategy to mitigate the harmful effects of gambling on Tasmanian communities. Our party is committed to developing and promoting legislation that prioritise the well-being of individuals and families affected. We also understand the importance of cash. Children going hungry, can't pay the house payment. It's all just a spiralling downhill. Going completely digital is rather naive. We also recognise and support the rights of individuals to participate in a regulated gambling environment. It's a personal choice. I believe the card system that you only, it's an illness. You know, and people can say, no, it's not. The gambling machines, I go to the casino, I go there for tea. Occasionally, with friends, the music they play. Ding, 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 ding. You know, it's like, and there's more. Okay, go to a supermarket. Where do they put the milk? Right at the back. What music do they play? The feel-good music to buy another carton of milk.
Miriam Beswick, Jackie Lamy Network. Jackie has been very loud about actually getting rid of all pokies in Tasmania. So that's a great. We know the harmful, you know, result of gambling. However, I'm not sure that a mandatory card is going to make any difference. Will not say any difference. I would definitely be supportive of a card that helps people to manage their gambling addictions, and we definitely need to give them that opportunity. But like Dale said, you know, making something mandatory does not necessarily fix a problem. We need to do more around that. We need to allow people to, you know, we need to make this a more holistic idea. I'm sure this was not the only suggestion put forward by this report. You know, why do we just pick one up and only use that to go forward? Why are we just choosing to go, oh, we'll just give them this card, that'll fix everything? This is not the way things are get fixed. We need to make sure that we're looking at all of our opportunities. Let's put more things into this. This is not, it's just not a pick up and choose. I find that very concerning that we would just pick one from a bunch of suggestions. I also think a mandatory card would have a little bit of risk in terms of, okay, well, I turn 18 and now I get my card. And I just think there's a risk there that we need to really kind of make sure that we mitigate if we were bringing in something like this.
I think Felix has kind of given some really tangible things here that we're talking about, but obviously gambling is something that everyone is concerned about. We want to make sure that people are well looked after, that we do have things in place to help people. Gambling is not something you can just ban overnight. It's not something that can just be easily dealt with, because we're dealing with people at the end of the day. We've got to find ways how we help these people, how we help people who are struggling, because at the end of the day, it's not just the individuals but the families who are also impacted on this. So we've got to look for really tangible ways for how we can help these people, have really tangible ways for how we can support them when things are going hard, help them with the help that they need, be able to have those conversations, have people put in place to be able to support them to be able to do that. They're the sorts of things that we need to be able to do. But I think Felix has also given already quite a long list there to be able to help you out with that too.
Thank you, each one of you. That's the three prepared questions from the heads of churches. There's a few additional questions. We've got one more additional question that has come to us already. And then Nick has been looking through all of the questions from the room here. I'm sure he's been working hard. And after we answer this question, we'll give them an opportunity to bring some of them forward to us. But this first one, which is the one on your paper there, says this. We're deeply concerned about the prevalent food insecurity in Tasmania, which impacts over 100,000 individuals. That's one in five Tasmanians. And that's from the UTAS study 23 and 24. Our focus lies in bolstering access to emergency food relief and fostering community resilience. Furthermore, we're eager to understand your plans for ensuring sustainable funding for vital programs such as school lunch program and emergency food relief agencies. These organisations play a pivotal role in tackling the pressing cost of living issues faced by Tasmanians. And the question is this. What specific strategies do you propose to enhance food security in Tasmania, with an emphasis on expanding access to emergency food relief and strengthening community food resilience? Additionally, how do you intend to secure sustainable funding for critical programs like the school lunch program and emergency food relief agencies? We're particularly interested in actionable initiatives aimed at addressing the immediate challenges faced by Tasmanians while also promoting long-term sustainability in food security efforts. Furthermore, could you outline the financial commitment required to implement these strategies effectively? That's a lot for 2 minutes.
Well, thanks for whoever's asked that absolutely critical question, because it's very hard to learn on an empty stomach, and it's very hard to have a calm, peaceful household on an empty stomach as well. And there are people in our community who are doing it really tough and need that additional support that comes from emergency food relief. Can I acknowledge Andrew Hillier up the back, Loaves and Fishes, and the incredible work that they do in our community here in Devonport, but right across the state. The emergency food relief providers that we have, backed by Andrew and his team at Loaves and Fishes, do incredible work. Organisations from Grands Van, the Zion Neighbourhood House, people right across this electorate who are providing fresh fruit and vegetables and other staples and important food for people right across our community. Now, obviously, we're very keen as a government to continue funding that vital work, because
as I say, it underpins so much when it comes to supporting the next generation and to supporting strong families here in Tasmania. We need to be making sure that we're continuing that investment. We're currently living nationally through a very difficult cost of living challenge, and you look at what's happening around the country. Groceries are being hit particularly hard, and so for those people on a low and fixed income, that food relief can make all the difference for making sure that they get through the week. So ensuring that our funding is continuing to be strong, it's keeping up, and it's also fostering other important community resilience projects, which you mentioned before as well. That's things like making sure that we've got great education for our kids when they go to school about what healthy eating looks like, because there are far too many kids where, you know, the food at home looks like chips, lollies, and soft drink. So ensuring that our kids have a great understanding about what's the kind of food that they need so that they can live a healthy life. And then that flows, of course, through to the parents as well. And when parents come in to settings like that, ensuring that we have a way that we can gently intervene and help put them onto the right path in terms of things like additional help with cookery, in terms of additional support to find those healthy foods and get a great understanding. So we're really keen to back in those organisations who do that vital work, because we know how important it is.
A lot of you probably don't know me, but I have a beautiful daughter that's a principal of a special needs school in Victoria. Right? She's in her 30s, extremely hard working. They have this issue with kids' food in school, kids coming to school, no lunches, hardly any clothes, that sort of stuff. So she developed a program over it. It was called the Three Choice. Right? They got people like to do the Qantas lunches, those type of people. So they delivered the food to the school each day. There was three choices. Right? There's gluten-free, gluten with, and there's something else. There's no lollies, nothing. It was all vegetables or base meat. You had the choice, chicken or beef. I can't see why those meals cost that school $4 each. All right, so I think our government, realistically, have been in power for 10 years, and a lot of things that I hear, we've been waiting 10 years. So let's implement a solution and everybody get behind it. At least our kids are getting fed every lunchtime. Thank you.
Food relief is definitely a complex thing. Cost of living is definitely a complex thing. I think one of the best ideas we've got is, you know, this food in schools, because, you know, it's actually talking about not just we want to get you fed, it's actually saying our education is important, because I think in our culture we really struggle with getting that word across, that education is important. It is important to finish year 12, it is important to get, you know, to actually dream and get past, you know, the basics of life. And I think sometimes we, particularly here on the northwest coast, we don't dream. We have a culture, we have a socioeconomic area where people are too afraid to dream. And I think, you know, when you look at Maslow's, you know, theory of needs, and we need our shelter and we need our housing and we need food on the table before we even have the capacity to dream. And I think it is so important that we put structure around this, and we say to our faith-based organisations, and we say to our all of those not-for-profits out there and social enterprises and all of these things, that you are important, and we know that what you are doing is important to our community, and it's an opportunity for us to grow our whole and, you know, bring prosperity to our region. So I'm really behind the idea of you know, food in schools. I think that's like base level we should be at. And there are more things that we can do around that. So I'm really excited to hear everybody's ideas, and let's get people's ideas on the table, because we need to make this happen.
Darren Briggs for the Greens. My first debut on TV was on Gardening Australia because I was supplying excess garden vegetables to Produce to the People, which was a local charity in Penguin. Growing our own food, healthy, organic stuff is critically important. Community is really important to help people out of the struggling. Look, our policies include extending to all public schools the Eat Well, Move Well program, which again is about education, the importance of food, the importance of healthy food and exercise. It's part of our preventative health platform, which also includes like removing junk foods from the major supermarket checkout aisles because that is ruining kids' health and understanding of what good food is. We absolutely have included in our budgeted policies the school breakfast program. I don't have details on the actual school lunch program, but the breakfast program is certainly what we're definitely committed to, and we'll look at other options. Our policy also includes increasing funding for the emergency food relief programs. And absolutely, as per Greens, you know, we're here for environment and climate. Climate resilience, rehabilitation of our landscapes to produce landscapes and environments that are going to weather the storm of climate change is critical. That includes agriculture and supporting our farmers who produce the bulk of our foods to ensure their lands are going to weather the change of climate change as best they can. That includes you know, protecting river riparian areas, shelter belts which improve wind shelter and protect livestock and increase pasture growth. We've been great support for the beekeepers who provide a massive industry in pollination to continue to produce our foods, yet are getting ripped off by Sustainable Timbers Tasmania and losing their resource for their wintering of the bees. Our cost of living relief like transportation, energy efficiency and rentals and subsidies for other people, reforming school levies, all that type of stuff. Thanks, guys.
I'll be quick then. Just a few comments from me around this question. So in the schools that I've, again, schools that I've worked in, we've run a breakfast club, being able to help people who are in need and actually seeing those students who, some of them just come for a bit of an extra feed, some of them who have been on a bus for a couple of hours and so they were eating maybe at 5 a.m. breakfast that day. And for some of them, that'll be the main meal that they get that day. So I've seen firsthand where we need to be able to support students with the food they get and being able to do that in a targeted way, but also being able to partner with charities and organisations who are actually coming into our schools already, who are wanting to come into more schools to be able to help people out, because that's what they're there for at the end of the day. These charities want to be able to help people, and so we need to find the right conditions so that they can come into different schools and organisations to be able to do that. But in terms of food in general, we obviously need to be supporting our farmers and our small businesses to be able to make sure that they have the right conditions so that they can get the plate of food on your table, so that farmers are able to do their job well. Government is not getting in the way of them being able to do that well. I've been talking with farmers. I was out at Circular Head today talking with different people who are on their farms and different businesses. We need to make sure that they can do their job well, that they have the right conditions. And businesses who are selling the food to you, so you can put it on your plate, and restaurants who then go and cook it, who probably do a better job than me at putting it on your plate, are able to have, again, the right circumstances so they can do that, and they can do that at a good cost.
Thank you. Good evening, those listening at home. I'm Nicholas from the church here. I've been collating questions from the floor. Thank you, everybody. Fantastic questions. We would be here to midnight if we asked all of them, so we won't be able to, but I'll make sure they all get sent through. So the heart of the people in this room is put before all these candidates. So thank you for your questions. If we could, recognising we're trying to finish at 8:30 and want to respect that, could you go for a minute with these questions from the floor, halving your time, all right? But the first one says, with children experiencing neglect and abuse in the home and the number of foster carers reducing, retiring or resigning, meaning there's often not enough homes or foster carers for children in need to go to, what is your priority or plan in supporting the growth of foster care across the region? Thank you.
So foster care is amazing work, people that are looking after some of our most vulnerable children, and we're really keen to support foster carers in the work that they do. The Commission of Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse in Institutional Settings has demonstrated some really harrowing stories and the need for significant improvement supported by government. Now, as part of the 191 recommendations that the Commission of Inquiry has handed down to government, there are a significant number of those into foster care and into out-of-home care. We'll of course be working really closely with all the providers and with all the people that open their homes to these little people who need support, so that we can go on that journey together. We can make sure that not just our large institutions, but also our foster caring homes are safe and supported, and that foster carers have the resources that they need to ensure that their stewardship of these very important little people is well respected and fruitful for those people going forward.
Foster care, I've got quite a few friends that foster children. One recently, a little girl, 12 months older than her own daughter, 5 years old. That child was in foster care from the day she was born. Okay? People have done an amazing job for her. The mother, the child has never seen her mother. Never once. The grandmother raised her child. The grandmother's got two elderly to look after that little girl. So my friend was the foster carer. They took the little one on board, and now they've adopted her. She's never had a Christmas present, never had a Christmas, never had a birthday. In this day and age, I find that unbelievable, because most of you people here are all family people. That's what we celebrate every year, our birthdays of our kids and all that sort of stuff. I think a lot of people get so attached they do not want to give those children up. So it's very hard to find a solution for it without getting people that possibly don't have children. If those children can never go back to their normal home, maybe the adoption process is something we could look at to help along the line to alleviate and give a bit of love and attention back into those kids' lives. Thank you.
I think the area of foster care is, this is a holistic issue. This is an issue about how are we looking after the disadvantaged in our community. This is about how are we teaching people how to live. This is where churches come along and say, we know, we come hand in hand and we disciple people and we say, we want you to know how to live, how to be the best person that you can be. Foster care is where it just highlights the whole problem, that's hiding in the corners. So there's more to do around foster care, and I think it's not just about who are the carers. I think this is about how are we improving the people's lives in general.
Darren Briggs for the Greens. Absolutely an undervalued resource of foster parents. I've got some friends, and I know the hours and the commitment they put into it and the sad stories of the kids. Our BAS candidate, Cecily Rossell, is a foster mother. She released our policy on child safety and things recently. I haven't to hand got exact details about foster caring. As I say, my job as a GP, I do not know everything. I've got guidelines and resources to go to. So please go to our policy page and have a look at that and reach out and talk to us on more details. We certainly have a investing in child safety policy, which is increasing child safety officers, dedicated caseworkers, and changing how that is all going to be managed into the future, and recruitment and retention of essential workers, which includes in the child safety region. Thanks.
So I've met a number of people who are foster carers, and I know that they have some of the toughest jobs in raising children, and it's often not just being with them for a few weeks or a few months, or it might be on and off a few weeks or a few months, but many times it is years or the whole life of that child. They essentially become that child's parent. And so 100% we need to be supporting them, making sure that we have obviously the right people, making sure that we do have the right things in place to make sure that those children are looked after, because so many of those children have come from very troubled backgrounds, many of them experiencing trauma or violence. Life for them has not been easy. And so for those people who are foster parents, taking these children into their homes, caring for them, treating like they're one of their own, it is full on. It's a big job for them to do. But it's an important one, because we want children to be raised where they can feel safe, where they can feel known, where they can feel loved, so that when they grow up, they can go on to have a better life than they might otherwise have had. So, of course, we want to be helping our foster families. We want to make sure that we have the right things in place so that they can do a good job to be able to help those young people.
All right. Last question, everybody. What are some of the ways that you are planning to improve our overloaded and struggling health system? 1 minute.
Okay, I think everybody in the last couple of weeks has seen Labor and Liberals come out with their scholarship program. If anyone would like to look at my page on the 5th of January, scholarships for our best skilled children, the highest HSC scores. What they have to do, they apply for a scholarship to get into university to be our critical needs people, doctors, nurses, paramedics, all that. For the cost of that, the government would pay their HEX fees plus allowance every year. Right? With that, if it's a 5-year degree, 6-year degree, they sign a contract, they give that time back to our state and our state hospitals. If they choose to leave that system, and what we've gave them the opportunity and the relief we've gave their families with financial, because not every kid out there has got parents that can send a kid to uni. It's not just the HEX fees you're going to pay at the end of the day. You give them a car, you've got to give them accommodation, food, allowance. So that is our policy back on the 5th of January. You can see it, read it, they jump on board. Thank you.
Darren Briggs for the Greens. As a doctor, I'm absolutely passionate about healthcare. We've got policies on recruitment for nurses, recruitment for paramedics, increased paramedic stations, improving or bringing on building. We're doing all that. The major parties are doing all that stuff as well. I've said earlier, prevention is absolutely key. Our children are heading for a shorter lifespan than ourselves. We have comprehensive preventative health policy about educating in schools, educating on exercise, on diet, incentives for business to keep staff healthy, community grants. We've released a policy to, like, I no longer work in our rural hospitals like Smithton and Queenstown because I feel totally unsupported and medically legally vulnerable. I know other doctors feel like that. So we're calling on Liberal and Labor to roll out emergency video conferencing facilities in our emergency departments, which brings in immediate help for nurses and doctors when you have critical patients. Recently in Tuller, in a town I'm involved with, we lost the last paramedic volunteer. Next station is over an hour away. There was a severe allergic reaction. We're calling on government to roll out emergency first aid kits like in remote areas of the mainland. Oh, it goes on, it's down here. Thanks.
So, a huge question, and encourage anyone who's really, really interested in this area, go online, have a look at our 2030 Strong Plan for Tasmania's future. A huge focus for us is healthcare, because we know that health is the number one most important issue for families, and if you don't have your health, what do you have? But broadly speaking, it's about investing in better facilities, the largest ever investment in the Mersey Hospital since it was built, major new ambulance stations in rural and regional areas right around Tasmania,
important cancer treatments in the Northwest Regional Hospital and patient travel assistance programs so that more people can get to the healthcare that they need. But it's also about investing in the people in our system, making sure that we have more doctors who are able to step into the GP space, which we know is a federal government problem. They've dropped the ball and we're going to step up in that area. We're also going to be paying the HECS fees for rural doctors to come and work in Tasmania as GPs, stay, be part of our beautiful community and continue to invest in new nurses, in new paramedics, in new community paramedics and all of the incredible people that make a difference each and every day working in our healthcare system. I just want to say thank you to all of the people in this room who I know contribute in so many ways to the healthcare of our community and have a look online at our 2030 Strong Plan for Healthcare.
I feel it interesting that a lot of this hasn't been happening. My husband's got a doctor's appointment tomorrow to see his specialist, and he has to go to the GP today in order to get his referral to go there, even though he's been seeing that specialist for 5 years. I think we need to forget, I think we need to not forget that in order to actually recruit and to be able to have, you know, more people actually working in our health system, that we need to have houses for them to live in, that we need to have schools for them to go to, and we need to have childcare available for their children. We can't just look at healthcare as healthcare. We keep looking at our whole state as like, here's this bit, and here's this bit, and here's this bit. No, we all need services. We all need these things. You know, our doctors need hairdressers, and our hairdressers need doctors. Like, this is not, you know, we can't just separate these things. We need to look at the whole of our how we do things, and we need to look at it in a long-term idea. Thank you.
I'll just quickly say a few words because I know we've gone over time. So we are investing into our health system. I've been going around knocking on doors and talking with people, and the number one that seems to come up with people is health, health, health. And so that's why what the government is going to do if we're re-elected is invest into health, health, and health. We're going to be investing into our hospitals, not just down in Hobart and Launceston, but up here as well, but also going to be looking at our regional areas as well. We're going to be making sure that those places like down in Smithton and on King Island are also getting more help by having more paramedics in that space. So if they've got smaller injuries that have happened, if you've got a nasty cut where you don't necessarily need to be raced to the emergency, but you do need someone to look after you more, we need to be able to get those people quickly looked after in their regional areas, and so we have fewer people who are needing to go to the hospital so that the doctors can get on with looking after those people who are already lined up there. So we're hearing you. We're knowing that health is very important to people, which is why we are going to be majorly investing in it. Please go onto our website so that you can actually see the list of policies and the things that we are rolling out so we can address this really big problem. And just once again, thank you very much. I'm not sure if I'll get the opportunity to say this, but thank you very much again to everyone for coming out tonight, for asking such wonderful questions, for caring to ask such wonderful questions. It is such a blessing to have the community come together to be able to show an interest. We're really thankful to you for doing this and just really thankful again that you are thinking of us, and as Felix was talking about, that you are praying for us. Please continue to pray for us. Continue to pray for the future of our state as well. And thank you again.
And I thought we were asking the questions tonight. Matt Back from the Anglican Church. And I want to reassure Patrick and all the candidates that we have a difficult job in voting. But we know that you've got a difficult job in standing and coming up with policies to help our state. So please, I think I can speak on behalf of all of the churches, not just in Devonport, but across the electorate, that we will be praying for you all as you go through this process. And as I said earlier, praying for God's will to be done. Can we please thank Darren and Patrick and Felix and Dale and Miriam for giving up their evening tonight. I know they're so busy at the moment. And thanks to Nick for allowing us to meet here. You've got lots more questions that have been submitted, so we will, if it's okay with you guys, we'll email them to you, just so you've got an idea of the questions being asked. Well, you're welcome to respond if you'd like to, and we'll see how that goes. Thank you to all of you for coming out tonight. I'm sure you've got lots more questions, but we've still got a few more weeks to try to work out all these issues. This is just one step in the process. Let me conclude our night with prayer. Loving God, we thank you that you are a God who cares for every Tasmanian. And we pray through this process that you will sustain every one of the candidates that have been bold enough to put their hand up and say, I want to serve. And I pray that those that get elected will work together for the good of all Tasmanians and for your glory. In Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you for being with us tonight, everybody. God bless.